Hello and welcome to the Scale 3X podcast. Today we have a presentation by Tim Jones, President and Chief Technology Officer at Tolis Group. In this presentation titled 10 Pounds of Backup in a 5-Pound Window, Tim will discuss improving backup planning for growing environments. Tim was one of the original Brew developers and has over 14 years of experience in data storage and the backup industry. He is actively involved in the open source community through Linux International, the Linux Standards Base Project, the Linux POSIX Project, and the Linux Professional Institute. Notes and slides from this presentation are available on our website at www.socallinuxexpo.org/podcast.
We got started with this stuff back before there was a digit on the left side of all the decimal points. My first kernel to actually port Brew to was 099, patch level 12. It was me, Adam Ritter. I don't know if you guys remember Yggdrasil. Anybody remember Yggdrasil? Anybody remember what it was? Anyway, it's a Nordic tree of life. That's what Yggdrasil is. And so anyway, basically what we want to do here today is talk about the problem that data has created for system administrators. And the biggest problem is that there's too darn much of it. How many of you in here maintain a system with 100 or less gigabytes of total data? Do you also have systems environments where you've got much more than that? Yeah, that's what my point is. If all you've got to deal with is 100 gigabytes, there are probably 1.5 billion solutions out there that'll work perfectly for you. How many of you deal with a terabyte or more? Okay, let's shift that. How many of you deal with 10 terabytes or more? We got a couple. All right. One of the biggest issues that you face is that your data's this big, it's a 10-pound elephant, and your backup window's this big, it's a 5-pound sack, and it's really difficult to stuff that elephant into that sack. So that's why I call this, or how to get 10 pounds of data into a 5-pound bag. Let's take a look at a couple of simple terms. What is a backup? According to the dictionary, and you can check this at dictionary.com if any of you have a BlackBerry with you, or a PDA that's enabled on the net, but basically, according to the dictionary, it's a reserve or a substitute, or more appropriate to most of us, it's a copy of a program or file that's stored separately from the original. But a seemingly more appropriate definition for what we face today is it's an overflow or accumulation caused by clogging or stoppage. How many of you currently use tape for backup? Okay. How many of you use just disk? How many of you use both disk and tape? Okay. You guys are becoming more the norm. The folks that use disk and tape are starting to realize that one is not the total answer. Both combined give you a better solution, and we're going to get to that. But one of the biggest things that you run into if you're backing up to tape is this, a blockage or clog. You can't get the data onto the tape fast enough before it's time to start the next backup. So we asked over time, why don't we back up? And what I'm going to hit you with here are some very quickly some things that these are real answers that we've heard from folks just like you on these trade show floors over the years. We don't need to. We don't have an infrastructure. Now, believe it or not, that one is a real tough one, but how many of you bought new PCs in your organization this year? And how many of you had budget to extend the backup process to include those new PCs? We had one. More often than not, the infrastructure becomes an issue. And then finally, it's easier to recreate the data. How many of you believe that one? I have literally heard that 10 times in the past 2 years, one time already on the floor this morning. We don't have enough time. Any of you got any other reasons why you wouldn't back up? They don't pay me enough. Okay. Let's take a look. We don't need to. Some of the subtexts on this are the work I do on a computer isn't that important. Maybe not to you, but how about to other people that depend upon you? I only use my computer to play games. Guys, I'm 64 hours into Homeworld 2 right now. I don't want to do that again. So even if all you're doing is playing games, there's still a reason to at least back some of it up. And then finally, I have all the original software disks. Okay, I can accept that, but what about the data? We don't have an infrastructure. The data are on too many different systems. This one is real. Because even if you've got a server farm and everybody is supposed to be saving everything on that server farm, how many of you find out that a user lost a document because they saved it on their local disk? Yeah, a lot of hands and heads. We only have one tape drive, and we use it to back up the web server. Okay. We don't have a budget to put an infrastructure in place. Believe it or not, that's a biggie, and that's a tough one. It's hard to fight for backup. It's like flood insurance. How many of you have flood insurance on your homes? And how many of you were forced to buy that flood insurance? Because you've never lived in a flood. Why should I buy flood insurance? I've never been in a flood. Well, backup is much the same. It's easier to recreate the data. Okay, I'm just going to leave that one alone. We don't have time. These are very good points, and this is the element that we're going to focus on here. The backups require too much manual attention. How many of you really have to babysit your backups? This is not a good use of manpower. Sorry, ladies. There's more data to backup per day than the amount of time that I have with no users on their systems. Basically, this is our 10-pound elephant in our 5-pound bag. And then tape drives are too slow. How many people believe that? Tape drives are too slow. So, throughout all this, the biggest real factor, discounting infrastructure, is that time. We don't have enough time to do the job that we need to do. So let's start looking at how we can plan to reduce time as an impact. Where are the primary business data, primary business and operational data stored? There are usually two locations, centralized servers and on the user systems. How many of you are in that utopian existence where everything gets stored on centralized servers? Okay, so Todd Rundgren was wrong. Everybody puts data that they shouldn't be putting on their local disks. Even if they don't know it, good point. They just know that they saved it in my documents. I mean, I use a Windows paradigm there, but most of us understand what that means, whether it's on a Linux desktop, a Windows desktop, or an OS X desktop, or a Solaris, if you were that lucky, desktop. If they're using local storage, as the backup administrator, do you know what data on that disk is important? How many of you have actually taken the time to make sure you're not backing up that user's MP3 collection? That's a good one. Real quick way to use up tape is to back up MP3s. One, they don't compress. And two, usually people have, 12, 14 gigabytes worth of that stuff on their local machine. Can your backup tool locate and pull that necessary data to a central backup location? So my question there is aimed at, are you pulling each machine individually to your backup tape or backup environment, or are you pulling the data from those remote systems into the local environment for easier manipulation? This is assuming that you're going to let them continue keeping that data on the local disks. And then finally, if you're not going to let them keep it on the local disk, can you get all that data moved where you need it? That's a tough one. Because again, even if you get them to move it today, what happens tomorrow? Save my documents, my file name. If it's on a shared storage server, this does not solve your problems. Are the data stored in a logical and hierarchical manner? Do you have multiple copies of the same stuff on that server? And how much of the data is actually accessed? We went through and did our own migration analysis and audit on our servers within Tolis Group. Our total data environment is just a little over 530 gigabytes. Discounting the MP3 server, which we make people put that stuff on a separate machine. When we took a look to determine how much of the data had been accessed in the last 120 days, it was less than 45 gigabytes. How much of that stuff do I have to leave around? It's been there for 4 months with nobody touching it. So the question that you need to answer here is, what do you really need to back up? Do you need to back up C:\Windows, C:\Program Files, /bin/dd? Are these things that need to be backed up? My input is no. So we asked the question, tape and disk, who's using what? Let's take a look at some of the positive and negatives of each technology. Disk positives, the per disk capacities are going up. The prices are coming down. We just bought some 300 gig SATA drives for under $100 each. Now, granted, I do not put them into the same realm as Atlas 15K SCSI drives. They're not designed for the same purposes, but as long as you got backups, I can throw away a lot of SATA drives for what I would have paid for that 15K Atlas. Firewire and USB interfaces of these external drives allow for portability. This means that I can back up this machine, and I can take that drive, and I can store it somewhere else. How many of you do backups, but your backups are stored right there on site? How many of you are planning on finding another job when you can't get into your building to get your backup tapes to give them to your disaster recovery site? Guys, store the stuff off-site, even if you just take tapes or drives home with you. Take them home. At least if your work building burns down, probably unless you live above your storefront, your home is not going to burn down. Hot swap and removable disks allow for this. Whether it's FireWire or if you've got a RAID array where you can go through and pull out those seven drives and put in seven fresh drives, and all you're using that RAID array, by the way, is for backup purposes, you can take those drives home. So these are things that give disk a positive. Plus, of course, the one thing that I forgot to write up there is you're writing at disk speed, disk negatives. Disks are fragile creatures. Drop one out of your car when you're unloading it to take the units into the bank. Probably that data is gone. Stiction. How many of you have heard that term? If you take a drive that's been powered for a while, and it spins, and you take it off-site and you let it sit on a shelf for 60 days, 90 days, the longer it sits, the higher the probability that you're going to find out what the word stiction means. Disk drives today, in order to get that head flight height down so that they can put more data in that same area on that platter, they've put an aqueous coating on top of the platters, top and bottom of the platters, and over time, after that disk has been spinning for a while, that aqueous coating has a tendency to seep into places it shouldn't. It's micro volumes. But unfortunately, all it takes is one little bit of something gooey grabbing a hold of that head assembly, and you're not going to have a head that does this any longer, which means that you're never going to be able to access that drive unless you send it back to OnTrack. They'll open it up in a clean room, clean it all up, and send it back to you for around $2,500. In RAID environments, I mentioned pulling the disks out and taking them somewhere. You've got to keep that order right, because even some of the best RAID solutions out there, if you put the disks back into the array in an incorrect order, there's a probability that they're going to think you've put a blank disk in and take care of it for you. And, of course, this is my favorite hatred. Disks can be usurped from backup use to file system use. It used to be the backup drive, and now it's G. Hey, why did I run out of room on the backup drives? Oh, I was temporarily storing up the website copies until we got the new server online.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk about tape positives. Very large capacities per tape. Super DLT, Super AIT, LTO2, LTO3. We're up in the half to 600 gigabyte per tape native capacities. By the way, when I talk tape, you'll always hear me talk native capacities. How many of you believe in 2.1, 2-to-1 compression on tape hardware? Because I've got some land in South Florida that I'd like to talk to you about after this show. But from a native perspective, even natively, these devices can hold 2, 4, 5, 600 gigabyte per tape, assuming zero compression. If you're lucky enough to be getting compression, that number goes up. Never expect to see the numbers that the vendors tout. If you're getting 1.3, 1.4 to 1 on an average system, you're getting good compression. Rest easy. They're easily stored off-site. I could stand up here with very important data on LTO tapes, and I could throw them and hit the back wall. You could bring them back up to me, and I could restore the data. Plus, they can sit on a shelf for 80-plus years and retain every bit of data that's been written to them. Now, not all tapes have that long. longevity when you start talking some of the helical scan technologies such as DDS or AIT or VXA. You're down in the 30 to 40 year range, but you know, for most of us, we're not going to be worrying about that data around then. So again, very long shelf life for archiving and no stiction. Negatives: high cost of entry. We were discussing this a little bit before the meeting. You buy a tape drive. Sometimes what you get is the Gillette model. You get this tape drive for very little money, relatively speaking. But the tapes cost you an arm and a leg down the line. Or you pay a little more for the tape drive up front, and the tapes are more cost-effective down the line. When we start looking at, I'll take, for example, an LTO2 technology environment, you're talking 30 megabytes per second in performance. You're talking 200 gigabytes per tape. And an average street price on tapes is around $65. So you're getting $65 for 200 gigs of uncompressed data on a tape that has the ability to last for 80 years. Believe it or not, when you start looking at what it would cost you to recreate the data that's on that tape, that's a bargain. Slower speeds. Notice I put an asterisk there. How many of you are familiar with how slow tape is? Okay. How many of you have had a chance to see a new LTO3 drive? The LTO consortium team members, HP, Certance, now Quantum, and IBM, have just started shipping in quantities their LTO3 technology. This technology is 400 gigs native per tape, and it will accept data at 84 megabytes per second. For the first time in the history of tape, and I've been doing this since 1984, for the first time in the history of tape, we have a tape device that is capable of outpacing any known file system, including Riser 4, for those of you that have been playing with that. It's fast, but if I want to get compression on that drive, I have to send three times that number to its input buffer. So if I'm not yanking 240 plus megs per second of cooked data off the file system, I'm not going to get 84 megs a second of throughput on this device. Unless I disable compression, or I'm sending through only AVID data, only MP3s, you know, or stuff that absolutely is not going to compress. Sequential access, man, it took me 2.5 hours to put the data on the tape. It's going to take me 2.5 hours to get to that, you know, if I want this file back. It took me 2.5 hours for that file to be backed up onto the tape. So it's going to take me 2.5 hours to get to that file to restore it. Now, that's true in general. We'll talk about some things that alleviate that from a tape perspective. It requires specialized software. This is true. You can't simply go to your KDE or GNOME desktop and drag and drop files to your tape drive. There have been a couple of folks that have tried to provide this kind of interface, and the results have been, horrific, because the restore process has always been a problem. And then finally, restoring is a pain. Again, we'll talk about some things that alleviate that problem, but how many of you like restoring data from tape backups? Besides me, because it's, well, what I do. Now, let's take a look at something, and this is what the focus of the rest of the conversation is going to be about. It's disk to disk to tape. Some of you are writing to disk. Some of you are writing to tape. Some of you are writing to both. And I would put forward to you that if you're not writing to both right now, please stop and take a look at what's available. Disk to disk to tape, you get that high performance of writing to a disk volume. However, you can then take the data and move it on to tape in a totally out-of-band situation. So we back up our client systems as fast as our network lets us to the disk. Now, without involving the client systems, without involving any of the servers, I transfer that data from that machine's disk storage onto tape. Out of band, no network interference, users don't care. But you now have, again, the best of both worlds. And that, in turn, provides more robust offsite storage. How many of you are going to start taking tapes home, if you're not already? But this way, we've got speed, and we've got reliability and recoverability. So, let's look at the disk-to-disk portion of this. How many of you are currently doing things like rsync? or remote TARs. Okay? That's a great way to get data from the localized machines onto a centralized storage environment. These are just some of the things that I've put up there. Of course, Brew falls into that picture because we've been doing this since 1985 and we do it very well. The next thing, now that's client-side push. The next thing is you can do server pull. Generally with server pull, and I don't mean mounting via NFS or SMB or AFP, I'm talking about real server-side pull where we've got a communication channel between the server and the clients over the network that has nothing to do with mounting. Tools like Amanda, how many of you are currently using Amanda? Okay. Brew Server, this is a new product from us, and NetBackup, how many people are using NetBackup or something like that, OmniBack? Okay. These are tools that provide you with the ability to install a server that will pull data from clients. Additionally, you can get your hands on some dedicated devices. These are things that mean that you don't have to turn around and build a system. Of course, we've got a new product that we've announced here at the show that we're letting you guys take a look at called the Brew App. It's a Brew appliance. Certance, again, now Quantum has a product that they call the CP3100. If you use DDS environment media, this is a very good solution for you. Overland Data has a product called the Rio. And G-Corp has a device that they call Virtual Tape that basically, and I didn't go on with others under the Virtual Tape realm because pretty much everybody uses Falcon Store's product called Infinistore, which is a virtual tape solution based on Linux. Then the two-tape portion of this is the server moves the data from two-tape from the local disk. And most backup tools will do that, tar, CPIO, dump, even DD or copy if you know what you're doing. So the best way to get around all of this is to buy something that gives you the whole ball of wax, disk to tape, in one complete and integrated package. Amanda does this. Brew Server does this. The Certance CP3100 does this. Those are just, I've given you one example of an open source product, a commercial product, and a piece of hardware. So, in disk-to-disk considerations, the backups are still usually local. A disk failure within a disk array can cause unrecoverable data loss. And a low-cost of disk, the low-cost disks, as I mentioned earlier, don't offer the life expectancy of high-end disks. But with disk-to-disk-to-tape, you get the best of both worlds. Now, I'm going to pause here because I do want to talk about virtual tape versus staging versus file systems. Something has come out over the last year called the Virtual Tape Library. Now, how many people work in the IBM mainframe world? Okay, you know about virtual tape libraries. So IBM's been doing this in the mainframe world for years. But for the rest of us, virtual tape libraries have just come about with folks like Falcon Store and a couple of other companies out there. They've got some software that you embed into an environment that allows you to emulate tape on disk so that if you're running Brew or TAR or CPIO or Amanda or NetBackup or OmniBack or any of these tools that are usually looking for /dev/st0 or /dev/rmt/0n, well, that's what they're going to find. Because what the software does is it allows you to pretend that you are a tape drive so far as existing software is concerned. This means that you get disk speed without having to change your existing backup application. The only issue that comes into play there is generally at a price point that's in line with normal backup boxes like plain old tape drives. The result is you're going to pay about the same for a 1-to-4 tape drive emulation package. But because it's emulating tape, you're still only able to do one machine at a time because we're talking about a sequential environment. Now, that one machine at a time is going to be 10, 20 times faster than writing to a DDS3 DAT drive. But it's still the machines will have to take their turns. And if you've got a situation where you did go out and get one of these products or packages that has 6 emulated tape devices, Now you've got to make sure that you've got a backup application that can take advantage of six of these things simultaneously. Once we've got that, does that kind of give you a description? Okay. So what it does is it pretends it's a tape drive, but in addition, usually they also pretend that it's a library. It pretends that it's a library. So, for example, the Certance product, that CP3100, it pretends that it is a DDS4 DAT72 product drive, single tape drive, with a 26-tape library. And that uses up your 250-gig hard drive that you're actually writing to in this device. The result is, again, you're getting DAT compatibility at a much quicker throughput than writing to a DAT. And then what they provide you in one of their packages is they'll actually give you a DAT drive that when it's then time for you to archive the data from the virtual library on the physical media, all you've got to do is push a tape into the drive. And their software then duplicates the layout that you presented. So if it's a TAR format or a BRU format or a net backup format tape, which actually I believe is TAR, you're going to get that same layout on the physical tape. Now when it comes time to pull data off of it, you can actually go directly to that tape and pull the data back. And the 3100, if what you're looking for works in that realm, their price point on this product is very strong and very convenient. And again, you do not have to change your backup process. If you're currently using DAT, you can put a CP3100 right in there, plug it in. It comes up, it tells your Linux or your Solaris or your Windows machine that you've got a Certance DAT72 DAT drive sitting there with 26 slots. So, next up the ladder is simply doing the backups to disk files, /tar-cvf/mydirectory/myfilename.tar. Okay? That is one way to do this. The only issue that you run into now, managing the file system that these archives are stored on is something that you're going to be very diligent about, because somebody may come along and say, what the heck is this .tgz file, RM? And there goes the backup. The next level up, and this is something that we have really driven hard to make sure people start to pay attention to, is called the disk stage. A disk stage gives you the usability of a virtual tape library, for example, with the simplicity of use of a disk storage device, i.e. copying the TAR files up. But because it's not using virtual tape library technology, if I've got Gig E and I've got 100 machines, those 100 machines could push their incremental backups up at the same time. Nobody has to wait turns. So these are the three environments that come into play when you're looking at disk-to-disk to tape. Generally, with disk staging, you will need dedicated software that knows to stage the backups. Amanda does this wonderfully. BRU Server was designed to do this. NetBackup has a rather expensive add-on module that you can buy. That what it will do is it just gives you an alternate destination for your client backups. That rather than trying to push them to tape, it brings them into this disk stage. And the reason we try to differentiate the disk stage from the generic file system, because the disk stage is generally just a dedicated area of the generic file system, the data is stored in such a manner that so far as your backup application is concerned, when it comes time to restore, if the data is still in the stage, it handles the data as if it were on tape. So you don't have to play games with, okay, I need to restore Bob's machines. He deleted some files in a directory of the business model. I need to restore the files from day before yesterday. They've not been staged to tape yet. They've not been moved from the stage to tape. So I need to restore those. Well, with both Amanda through the command line environment and with BRU Server and with that net backup module, you can actually say, okay, Bob's machine, the 11th, okay, that directory, restore. And the data will then be pulled from the stage environment right back onto the machine. But on the other hand, one thing that we've taken this a step further with BRU Server is, even after the data has been upstaged to tape and removed from the, and cleared from the stage, it's the same process. You as an administrator don't need to worry about where the data exists physically. that kind of explain that? Oh, if when we're dealing with disk to disk to tape, does the verify process occur once or does the verify process occur twice? In other words, are you verifying when you go from disk to disk and then verifying again when you go from disk to tape, correct? Okay, I got a nod on that. So basically, with BrewServer specifically, yes, we do verify it both times. However, understand that the Brew verification process is an out-of-band verification pass. It does not involve the original file system. We do not do we allow you, if you choose, to do a differences where you do a bit-by-bit comparison. But our verification process involves some metadata that we actually store in the Brew format on the archive itself. So some of the others, I believe, Amanda only verifies to the stage. I don't believe it then verifies from the stage to the tape. So, okay. So basically, in your backup strategy, how do you plan for what data actually gets written to stage and how long it is retained?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
In stage versus
move to tape.
Whether stage is something that's site, whether it's just basically a static file store, and then, okay, next time you come around, it gets wiped and you start over.
Okay. In speaking in terms of BrewServer, BrewServer has two mechanisms for keeping your stage environment clean. First of all, so far as running out of disk space, we provide full quota support. Secondly, when it comes to what you're backing up and how often it's backed up, the result is that you define fulls, incrementals, differentials on a schedule. And then let's say that you want to maintain 2 weeks of data on the stage, and you're doing a full backup every Friday. You're going to end up with two fulls and the resulting incrementals between the fulls on the stage for each client. But then you set, we have an age-out algorithm, and you tell us that once an archive is 15 days old, we just delete it, unless you've upstaged it or moved it from the stage to the disk, to the tape rather. So let me summarize real quick before I move into the last couple of slides that talk a little bit more about Brew and Tollscript. Disk to tape, if you're not already examining it as a backup option, please take the time to Google. You can actually Google on D to T, and you will find all kinds of stuff. There are all kind of vendors out there that are starting to provide support for this type of environment. And in all honesty, with just a little thought, you can create your own environment where you're moving tar from the local machines to a centralized storage environment, then taking tar and rewriting the data in that localized, the centralized storage environment out to tape. So there are a number of plays that can be put into place there. For commercial applications, talk to the vendor of the application, because while I don't know that all of them are starting to provide this, as I said, NetBackup has jumped on board. The folks at Veritas have jumped on board with a very good strategy there that's very similar to what we do with BrewServer. Amanda already does this, so for those of you that haven't looked at Amanda allows you to pretty much use any underlying backup mechanism that you want, such as PAX or TAR or CPIO, and we at one time actually, and I think we probably still have, if anybody's interested, a script that will allow you to convert Amanda to utilize Brew as your actual IO engine as well. So the methods and methodologies of disk to tape is the summation of what I'm trying to get across here for helping you. Once you've decided what really needs to be backed up, in other words, not the MP3s, not those unwelcome JPEGs, but just the corporate or day-to-day operational data. First of all, in that case, you've now dropped that 10-pound elephant down to a 6-pound elephant. And then when you go around and say, wait a minute, I've already got 35 copies of that 17-month-old file that hasn't been touched in 17 months. I don't need to back it up anymore. Then you've now started to do some grooming of that data. Our 6-pound elephant has now probably become a 3-pound elephant. that fits easily into our 5-pound bag. When we combine that with the performance improvements that disc-to-disc-to-tape brings to your operation, we've just made it a 1-pound elephant. And at that point, the manpower, woman power involved has just been dramatically reduced. The nastiness of having to come into work to do your job every day has just been reduced because you're no longer greeted with, oh, crap, today's backup tried to start, but Wednesday's backup hasn't finished. So look at the data. Look at the data's usefulness and examine disk-to-disk-to-tape.
As we talk about how you define Windows desktop environment, the hidden data, the infused data, the stuff that's in the registry, the stuff that customers don't know that they've got, but cringe when they discover it's missing, like settings, passwords, and websites.
Right. Well, one of the things that is, if you're responsible for backing up a bunch of Windows desktops, two things. Make sure that the software client that you're using supplies you with the registry. The Bruce Server Agent for Windows does. Additionally, and in fact, it's frustrating for some of our customers because even if you back up one 50-byte file off of that Windows machine, I still copy the registry. We're talking about data here. We're talking about getting somebody out of trouble. And I'd rather be 32 megs overdone than 32 megs underdone when it comes to backing up the registry. The second thing is, look, and I don't have a, does anybody have a Windows machine here? Basically, within Windows, there's a folder above the user level called Documents and Settings. If when you're backing up Windows machines, you include Documents and Settings, you get all of their Mozilla stuff, you get all of their mail configuration settings, you get all of the stuff that generally would be considered within a personal registry type of environment. All of those things are stored, but you have to go above the user level to a folder called Documents and Settings. That's your magic folder under everything since ME. It's been so long since I've dealt with 98, so I don't remember. Right. In that case, my strong recommendation to you is I know that QuickBooks can be directed to use a different source. And,
We just retreated. We finally said, not wanting to say I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We just started imaging.
The whole thing. Yeah.
Because I can't afford a customer to say, well, I installed this Opus program here. And I don't know where it puts its data.
Right. And that's another thing that is very important for you to examine. How many of you are consultants? How many of you have people besides yourself that you have to support? It is very important as part of your contract with your customers that you make sure that they agree that any software that's installed gets run by you, or it may not be backed up. And get that in writing and signed as part of your contract. Because users do all kinds of weird things on Unix, on Windows boxes. They will install all kinds of stuff. And the result is you as a consultant get caught with your on a blind side because they installed an update to QuickBooks, but they didn't want to overwrite their old version, so they installed it in a new folder. Now, they've moved and they've started using the new version, but your backup operation is still just backing up the old version. Unfortunately, there's no easy way with anyone's backup application that I'm aware of to say, backup QuickBooks. I wish there was. One thing that you could do with Brew is in our include.xvpatterns file, you could say is */*.qbk, and that would back up all of that. And basically, you can do that with any type of file. And it would find it because you start at the root level of C, D, E, whatever, and we would find any of those files and include them in the backup. So you need to kind of weigh that also, the functionality of the software that you're using, and see if it will give you that kind of environment. I don't use a lot of Windows software, so I don't have the ability to answer directly to that. And one thing I never try to do is I never try to slight anybody's backup software, because the fact that they've gotten a piece of software that actually reliably puts data onto tape and helps you get it back is just an amazing thing. Because if that was something that anybody could do, I wouldn't be standing here and you guys all wouldn't be sitting there, because we'd all have it down pat. So now let's quickly bounce in a brew, and then that gives us about 15 minutes to do some Q&A here. Let's talk about Brew Server. This is a new product that we released back in February. We're at release 1.1, both on Linux and Mac OS 10. It's true client-server architecture. The things that the server is doing, the thing that the agents are doing, and the thing that the console that you control the whole mess with are communication layer protocol-based products. You can go in, bring up the GUI, crash the machine that the GUI is running on, and it does not affect the server. It does not affect any of the agents, because it's simply a request-response mechanism that operates between whether you're talking about the GUI running on the server itself or running on your BlackBerry or whatever, because we have command line and cursor-based versions of the interface as well. Client support for most popular operating systems. The asterisk is for Novell NetWare. However, our friends at Novell are doing some wonderful things with the new Linux variant that is going to put Novell on top of Linux instead of AT&T System 7. How many of you have been around that long? Yeah, Novell's red box, when it started, it is actually based on an AT&T System 7 core OS. If you boot into that outside of the DOS environment, you will find a copy of CPIO sitting there ready for you to play with. It's still there. After all this time, they never removed it. Banyan Vines was the same way. Banyan Vines was also based on System 7. Linux and Mac OS X servers, OS X servers, are there now. We will be providing a Solaris version of the server. And that, if my engineering team is nice to me, will be right at the beginning of the summer. If they're not nice to me, I'll be apologizing for that fact to you next scale. How many of you write software? And how many of you have ever delivered anything on or before the day you thought you were? That's because you fudged your delivery date. Let's see, I think it's going to take 2 weeks. Let's multiply that times 8. Okay. Disk to tape, of course. Disk to disk, of course. While I don't recommend it as the only solution, it is there. And then finally, disk to tape support, all in one solution. And everything is fully verified and auditable. The question was, do you verify it twice? We do. But again, because our verification process involves the metadata that we've written in the brew stream to your archive media, it does not involve your client file systems. So please, if any of you are using brew, do not turn off verification. Verification is the only way for you to be sure that the data you think you wrote to the tape actually got there. In an average Linux x86-based environment, between the time that the file system gives up the data to its buffers in the kernel until the time that that buffer is then converted and written to the input buffers of your tape drive, there are anywhere from 6 to 12 points where corruption can occur and nobody knows anything has gone wrong. Let's see. TAR, tape.io read error. How many of you have never seen that? That's it's unfortunate, but some things like TAR, you could drive a Mack truck through the backup after it's pushed the data out to the device it's writing to, and the only time you know that a Mack truck has dumped its load is when you try to do a restore. Any server-mounted volume may be used for disk stage. So you can go out and buy yourself a huge RAID environment, plug it in through fiber channel, mount it on the server that Brew Server is running on, and tell Brew Server to use that for stage, and that's exactly where we'll put the stage. In 10111, you can only have one stage destination. In 2.0, you can have as many stage destinations as you'd like. We support SCSI, fiber channel firmware, and USB tape drives on both platforms. We support SCSI, fiber channel, and firmware libraries. And I don't list specifics there, because when we write things with Brew, we write to the T10 specification. So basically, if it's a SCSI tape drive, we work with it. And if we don't work with it, it's because there's a notice on linuxtapecert.org that says that this tape drive does not work right under Linux. So www.linuxtapecert.org. A lot of good information about tape there for those of you that run Linux. And now, quickly about BrewApp. It's a client-server backup application. Doesn't even have an operating system. It boots a hybrid Linux FreeBSD environment that just initializes and iterates and initializes the hardware and starts the brew server application. There's no file system. There's no nothing. Can't be hacked. Nothing. 5 minutes from box to your first backup. No more compatibility. No more installation. No more configuration. You answer 5 simple questions, including the administrative password, and it's ready to start doing its first backup. Your client systems point their web browser to the actual server after it's been installed. You download the appropriate agent for the machine, and as I said, we have agents for almost everything floating out there. And you start that up. You tell the agent to authenticate itself back to the server, which, by the way, we utilize a client-side authentication for security purposes. How many of you are security conscious? I figured as much. Diffie-Hellman, does that ring a bell to anybody? All right. We utilize a Diffie-Hellman public-private key exchange for the authentication process to deliberately remove the opportunity for man-in-the-middle spoof attacks. Next, if you are in a weak security network environment, you may turn on AES Level 3 256-bit encryption on the client, and all data that then transfers between the client and the server is encrypted at 256-bit. Now, if you're running a 486.25, expect to notice a hit in performance. But for most platforms, we've been very careful with the way we implemented this, and you will find that the average high-end P3, P4 system will not even notice that the brew agent is running. Which brings me to another point. How many people do their backups after everybody's gone home because they can't do their backups while the people are using their systems? With Brew Server's client-level technology, on an average P3 800 system, Brew can be running, doing a backup of the file system on that local machine. We will be hitting a load average of about 0.6 and a CPU utilization of somewhere in the neighborhood of about 23% with about 27 megs of RAM allocated for our buffering and the TCP IO stack. It's actually automatic within Brew. We will recognize if you are in an environment where we need to nice ourselves, and we will drop our priority automatically. Like I said, we've been doing Unix-level backups since 1985, and we've had a number of people that have come in and told us what we should and shouldn't be doing. The other thing is we do not ship Brew as a set UID application. However, take the time to actually pound on Brew. You will find that it is safely assignable as set UID. This will alleviate a number of issues from an administrative standpoint. We do not allow the user running the tool to accept any additional authentication rights above their user effective ID. The only thing is when you enable set UID, Brew is then able to make sure that our log is set up properly and that nobody's trying to spoof our log by linking our log to another application. Things that a user level running the application could not achieve properly. So that when we're writing to var log brew exec log, it really is var log brew exec log and not /bin/login. It also gives us the ability to ensure that the environment that we're running in is a stable and safe one. So we've been a set UID application since about 1987 when set UID stuff started becoming popular on Solaris initially and then moving over to the AT&T environment. But we don't ship it as a set UID tool, but you're welcome to make that change if you'd like. See, back to BrewApp, available in a rack-mounted F-site configuration. We can give you anywhere from 250 gigabytes to a terabyte of stage currently available, and we're working with a couple of hard drive vendors, and those numbers are going to be going up dramatically, probably in the late March time frame. The good news is you can pull the 250s out. We'll provide you with the updated modules, the updated rack modules or desk modules with the new, well, I can't really say what the capacity is, but with these new drive technologies that, and then when you bring the system back up, it says, oh, I've got a lot more storage space. Hang on a minute. And we recreate the file system, and away you go. Next, it includes Brew Server fully installed, configured, and ready to run 5 minutes from out of box to first backup. So, Thank you all for your attention during this. For more information on what we do, www.tollisgroup.com or www.brew.com. And if you really want to find out about some really good information on storage and backup in general, there's a site called techtarget.com. And they've been consuming a lot of these technology websites, informational origin. One particular subset of their sites is called searchstorage.techtarget.com. You will find all kinds of great information from some very, very smart people. Unfortunately, I'm not up there right now, so. But there are some people up there with some really good insight to both storage and backup. So, now, let me open this up to communication. The presentation is done from what I brought. We do want to talk about strategies. So,
how to transition for you to go from your product to the basically comparing the Tola stuff and the Veritas stuff on the why one the other? Obviously, you want to run your product
is a contrast and compare between Brew products and Veritas's products. Before I do that, what I wanted to say is for those of you that are you know, you've got some things to do, feel free, take off. You won't hurt my feelings. Thank you for coming and joining me today. We are in the hall in booth 14. We've actually got a terabyte Brew app with a Magnum 1x7 exabyte device. And for those of you that want to stick around for just a few minutes here, I would like to hit some strategy. I think we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left. Let me hit a contrast and compare. Veritas is a Windows technology primarily. I'm not talking about Net Backup right now. I'm talking about Backup Exec. So let's separate those two elements as well. As such, Backup Exec is a real strong Windows player. The biggest thing that I can say that I would be concerned about if I was using Backup Exec to backup is it still uses the MTF. Back in the days when we created it, it was called Mainer Tape Format or Mainstream Tape Format. It's now been given over to Microsoft. It's now Microsoft Tape Format. The thing about that is we created that format at a time when putting 20 megabytes of data onto a 20 megabyte tape was important. Therefore, a file that ends at byte 53 in a tape block, the next file will begin at byte 54. Now, from a technology standpoint, I can tell a tape drive to spin to block 37. I can't tell it to spin to block 37, byte 54. So if bytes 1 and 2 in block 37 are bad, I can never resynchronize and return the data off of that tape. That's Backup Exec. Okay. Net Backup, on the other hand, uses TAR. All of the tape data is written in TAR format. Brew exists because of TAR. In 1985, Fred Fish was trying to recover some Motorola corporate data from some 9-track TAR tapes. The restore failed, big time. Motorola, of course, being a source licensee, had the source to TAR. This was long before there was a publicly accessible TAR format. And so they took a look, and one of the things that Fred recognized is that TAR the application, was actually a pretty brain-dead, bulletproof, I don't mean brain-dead, brainless, bulletproof application. It did very simple things. The problem is that the format in which the data was written to the archive media, whether it was disk or tape, did not take into account oopses in the flow. And what he found is that as he analyzed these 9-track tapes, is that at about the 300,000th file, a bit slipped out of the stream and everything shifted left one bit in the stream that was going to that 9-track tape. Everything was gone at that point. So Brew originally was written to be command line compatible, and for the most part we still are command line compatible with TAR, but the way the data is blocked up and written to the tape, for those of you that are still trying to write 20 megabytes of data to a 20 megabyte tape drive, I don't recommend that you try using Brew because you're not going to get all your data on that tape. You're going to take somewhere between a 5 and 8% overhead hit for Brew, because what we do is every 2K of data we read from a file system, we apply a 32-bit checksum along with a bunch of other metadata concerning the file, and we place that into the header of that 2K block. I can get down to 2K granularity on any tape the brew writes, and I can give you any of the data back off of that tape. Even if why do tapes fail? Stray alpha particle, alien abduction, spilled coffee. I don't know, and I've been doing this for that many years. So the result is brew has the ability, because we do everything in 2K chunks, I always know that my next logical file header is going to fall on a tape boundary. I will always be able to restore the most amount of data from your archive that I possibly can. They want to be compatible across all of the platforms that they support, NetBackup that is. And so they want to use the TAR format. I can't blame them for that. However, we did offer to give them Brew, and Brew is available on every platform out there. So their choice. But that was long before they were Veritas tied in with Microsoft the way they are. Yes, there are a number of white papers. If you go to our website, www.tollscript.com or www.brew.com, in the left-hand column, there are a number of white papers. There are even some tests that we give you that you can run TAR and Brew doing the exact same things, and you'll find that TAR goes, and Brew says, whoa, that's nasty, hang on a minute. There you go, there's the rest of your data. So we actually give you some tests that you can run in your hands right from your keyboard to witness and experiment with what I'm talking about here. And there are a number of white papers that talk about looking at us versus things like NetVault and from Backbone and things of that nature. So, but the big reason that Brew exists today is because the TAR format is not robust enough. It's fine if you're creating a TAR archive on disk to send some files to a friend, but if you've got to worry about corporate data that, based on HIPAA regs, must be kept private, or based on Sarbanes-Oxley, must be kept around for 30 years, TAR isn't going to get you there.
What about busy files?
Well, busy files in the Unix world is a myth, because primarily when you're running any of the Brew products, you're running as a root-level operation, and the result is I can get a shared read-only lock on anything out there. On Windows, we have partnered with a company called St. Bernard Software. Their open file manager, we don't resell it because I'd rather you be talking to them about their product than us. We know our product, they know their product. But we've worked together, and they actually have a Brew agent within OFM that when Brew kicks off on a Windows box, OFM recognizes it and does all of its magic so that we're able to give you a quiesced copy even of an Exchange database or a SQL or DB2 database, whatever. OFM gives us that ability, and that's what we recommend strongly. Basically, what you're asking for is something we actually have planned in the 2.0 release of Brew Server. If you've got multiple Brew servers, we are going to use multicast or an M-bone multicast communication capability for the servers, MDNS, to recognize one another. They will all share their data amongst themselves. So if I need to restore and I'm logged into server 3 because I forgot that this was done on server 5, server 3 knows to talk to server 5 to get the data you're looking for. So it will do exactly what you've asked. Boy, he doesn't want much, does he?
Log in from any station, pull up a web browser, and
we don't use web technology for this. We use a dedicated console. Right now, you have the ability to use command line or a curses-based interface from just about any platform you can imagine. We have a graphical interface for Solaris, Linux, and Mac OS X. Right now, we have started reworking the interface to utilize some new stuff, shared stuff that's going to provide us with the ability to provide GUI on primarily Linux and Windows and OS X, simply because most people that are using our product in the Sun space or in the HP space or in the AIX space, it's just the client running there, and most of those machines aren't desktops anyway. But you can pull up our GUI from any machine, and as long as you've got network connectivity, it could be from your home, through your ISP, to your office, through a VPN or not. Because, again, there is a Diffie-Hellman key exchange that occurs even with the console. You're able to log into those servers. And because it's a request-response mechanism rather than, say, something like VNC where we're having to update the display every time you move the mouse. Everything is local. So your performance is acceptable even over 28.8K dial-up. So with Bruce Server, you get that now. Just we haven't done it via the web, and the simple reason is because we have too many customers that work in very high-profile security environments, and even as secure as Apache is, people are still coming up with new and interesting ways to hack it. So we've decided to stay with a dedicated communication layer with our own TCP IP stack, and it gives you the same reasonable functionality, just it's not done in a web browser. Very quickly, let's talk about full incremental differential. A full backup, is that everything on a system? No. It's everything that you've selected to backup regardless of its previous backup state. If I'm only backing up slash home, I'm still doing a full backup of slash home. That doesn't include binDD. So when I now do incrementals, the incrementals will be against the last full backup of slash home. So you will get files that have been modified or created since the last time the full was run. Now, we have two things here, differential and incremental. An incremental file is backup is data that has been modified since the last backup. So a full, let's call that a level 0. The first incremental is level 1. The second incremental is level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5. Then we're back to a level 0. Such that level 2 gets everything that changed since level 1, level 3 since level 2, level 4 since level 3, and so on. With the differential, basically, you're running two levels, a level 0 and a level 1, because what you're doing on each differential backup, you're backing up what's changed since the full. So when you consider this, which is going to be easier to restore from? Okay, but we're not going to do fulls every night. Okay, the answer there was full, but... Sure, fill it up. Go ahead. I've got some more disks I'd like to sell you. Basically, you're always going to find it easier to restore from a differential model. And the reason for that is we only need to restore the last full and the last differential. The downside to that is each differential gets slowly larger. Because if we had 200 gigs that changed over the weekend, Monday's backup would be 200 gigs. If we then had 100 gigs that changed Monday night over Monday, Tuesday morning's backup will be 300 gigs, and then 500 gigs, and then, so you see, as you move through the week, your differentials will continue to grow, whereas your incrementals will stay pretty much the same. Incremental backups make it easier for you to manage and plan your tape pool. Differential backups make it easier for you to